things happen to people who listen to radio.
Once we understand the bug, we will defeat it.
Are you ready for
the only good bug is a dead bug.
Shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs, all right?
Some say that a live and let live policy is preferable to war with the bugs.
I say kill them all!
Yeah!
Put it on and leave it on.
Welcome to Bug Radio, boys and girls. So that's it. The vaccine is 90% effective, and in 6 months, we've got a one-way ticket to Disneyland, otherwise known as Disneyland Total Landscaping, just next to the Smut Mag shop. So it's a shame we'll all be dead by then, because the world's ending in a deluge of guns, Jesus, and lunatic Republican grandees on the telly. Might as well make the most of it. We're up on iTunes, Spotify, and Threads Radio. That's threadsradio.com, and you can follow us on @BugRadio2020 on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a click, give us a five-star review. To howl in agony, I'm joined, as always, by the Norwood Knight Rider, Mr. Kieran Moggs Kaufman. How's the plague treating you?
I think, like everyone, I've just been studying graphics of the American Electoral College map. Feel pretty confident on some niche geography in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of American state-themed songs stuck in the head, like Oh Carolina, Gillian Welch's Look at Miss Ohio.
Georgia on my mind as well.
Naturally. And then on a personal note, taking some long walks and making some thick soups.
I've got a motor car this morning. Just at the moment when the government has finally decided to give motorists the hell they've always deserved, which we'll get on to later.
So we've, after a tricky year, and apparently the Mountain Goats single, I'm Going to Make It Through This Year, has been like the most popular song, which makes a lot of sense, it feels like. But after a bad year, a tricky year, except for, I suppose, grave robbers and people in very niche fields like that, it's been a broadly a bad year. But perhaps the turntables have turned and things might be looking a bit better.
So you'll probably have heard that Pfizer claimed that its vaccine has 90% efficacy, which most experts were saying that anything above 50% efficacy is great. So 90%, if that's true, is a game changer, in the words of the Pfizer CEO. It's important to remember that the findings aren't peer-reviewed yet. And it does feel slightly irresponsible wording at this stage. It's almost as if the goal was to goose the stock market straight after Biden had won. Well, it certainly worked.
People were treating this as a big deal. There's been a lot of talk about the progress of different medicines. There's been a lot of experimental drugs getting used on celebrities, pumping themselves full of the stuff. There's a big effort to portray this development as more significant, perhaps the most significant development. Let's not undersell this. People are positing a cure for the bug. The bug could be on the way out, hitting the skids. See ya. No more of this. So this is being tantalizingly dangled and endorsed by respected sources. The leading Yank quack, Anthony Fauci, describes the results as extraordinary. Everyone is thrilled. Pissed off outgoing president, possibly, is claiming credit, which ultimately is good because a lot of his supporters didn't believe in the bug. So if he's claiming credit for it, then all the QAnon lads can pile in. He has nailed his colors to the mast vis-a-vis the success of this. But there are just a few little insects buzzing around in the soup. So for one thing, Sir John Bell, top medical boss man of Oxford University.
Do we now say with confidence that life should be returning to normal by spring?
Yes. 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 I'm probably the first guy to say that, but I will say that.
Has, it turns out, said the exact same thing before. In June, when he said that we would have a vaccine, quote, approved by mid-September. Keep an eye on this guy. I mean, I don't want to disparage, I think it was your aunt's friend, Carol Sikora, who had a tendency to...
I mean, I'm not defending the bloke. He's made an almighty mess for himself.
So there's various people that seem to deal in upbeat, perhaps unwarrantedly upbeat analyses of where we're going to be.
Yeah.
And so some pinch of salt is necessary there. But I think it's not just Sir John Bell. So this is a positive development. Other flies, our people point out that the logistics will be difficult. This particular vaccine requires minus 80 degree temperature storage. It's sort of enormous.
Yeah, so it can be quite expensive to hump about, isn't it?
Enormous logistical chains, which are presumably beyond our government, which made such a catastrophic pig's ear of its test and trace system.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is anything like this? There's nothing I can think of that's sort of comparable in terms of the logistics required to make this work. So I don't see why anyone would be all that confident in our squad of goons' ability to make it happen.
Well, it's worth bearing in mind that it's not necessarily everybody who needs to have it straight away in order for it to have a transformative effect. It's mainly going to be older people, shielding people and hospital frontline health workers. Those are the people who need it right at the beginning. I mean, if it does work, and I'm sure there'll be a few people it doesn't work for, that's basically a kind of, it's a replacement for shielding, isn't it? Once you start to get a massive drop in deaths, the argument for sort of starting to open stuff up again becomes a lot easier to make. I think that's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, if this can make any sort of dent in cases, which just before we started recording, I saw we had record deaths today.
Yeah.
Our cases are still through the roof, as they are everywhere in Europe.
Hang on, we had record deaths today. How many deaths today?
It was 500 plus. So record in terms of the second wave. So this still is...
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, yeah, because we had about 1,300 in April.
We're currently knee deep in shit.
Hmm.
And we could use some good news. And it seems like we've broadly got it. Although a further caveat on this, we may be suffering another adverse effect of unwise tangling with nature in the form of a mink mutation. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I couldn't read it. It's just this is the most horrible story I've ever read in my life.
You're kidding. I mean, and you've read about the Moors murderers, Myra
Hindley.
Yeah, but
we're literally talking about 2.5 million animals just senselessly gassed.
Yeah. And you can't preach a Republican line on this one about personal responsibility because you can't really say it was their fault.
No.
But our Scandinavian brethren who use the mink for the fur trade because it's cold there.
Yeah. It's like an ancient thing, isn't it? It's been going on for like thousands of years and they've been doing
it. Yeah. Like, I feel like, can we give them shit about it? Maybe, maybe not. But this has created a situation where the bug has gone from the people to the minks and then back again. So this is a mutation that the leading Danish epidemiological society says threatens the sanctity of any vaccine as it would be some mutant strain and undermine our efforts to date. So the horrible part, the government ordered a mass cull of millions and millions of mink.
Yeah.
Although they didn't really have much better prospects anyway. They were going to get turned into coats.
It's absolutely true. It's just that when you see those pictures, it's just one of those stories where you just go,
leave it.
You know.
As it turns out, the Danish government was acting illegally.
Yeah.
So they've now had to call this off. So obviously they just sort of panicked and were like, kill all the minks. And people say that Donald Trump is like an unusually bad leader. Whoever they've got in charge in Denmark... replace them. I mean, you can't just go around sort of mass murdering minks.
Well, you can.
On a whim.
Yeah,
and so now they've had to undo that. But it remains murky as to the effect. So they stopped doing it because they thought it wouldn't necessarily help as well as being illegal. So that mink mutation is out there.
Hmm.
I don't know if Pfizer have anything really to do about it.
I mean, I can see why they shut themselves because... there is going to be a general problem with this vaccine, just in a wider sense, that the anti-vax community is probably bigger and louder than it's ever been. And a whole load of funding is being poured into PR to counter this misinformation. But at the same time, it just kind of feels a bit futile because the belief system that underpins the anti-vax movement is a kind of quasi-religious identity. So the slicker the ads and the more money that gets poured into it, the more suspicious the tin hats get. And I just think, I mean, you get the sense this is going to be a growing problem of people, just large numbers of people going on some Mumsnet thread or whatever and just deciding that they're not going to take the vaccine.
Yeah. I'm actually also concerned about how the issue with furry animals has been downplayed. I mean, we heard that story about the tiger in the Bronx Zoo that got the bug. There's been like the odd story about a Tiddles somewhere that's been infected. I think we need some clarity. We need some consistency on this point. I mean, do we need to kill all the animals? I guess we were doing that anyway. How worried should we be?
Put it on and leave it on.
Now on to what respected pundit Jack Schaefer is calling the shitfuck election.
Martial law in the country right now, and you send in armed military and National Guard folks into every single one of these swing states where they are counting ballots, and you force them to stop counting ballots right then and there. And if not, they are taken away by the military and arrested.
Which is still ongoing, still shitfuck, and is it's unclear where it's headed. So Joe Biden is notionally the president-elect, I guess, and he's trying to ladle on some normality, doing some very cliche-infested speeches, talking about how we're, like, better together and everyone should be nice to one another.
To be fair to him, it was quite surreal after 4 years of this moron to hear the leader of the free world talking about addressing the ethnic disparities in COVID deaths.
It's been mainly amorphous, kind of warming, soothing chat about unity more than anything. And I just want to make the point that that is a crock of shit. There's no unity. There's never been unity. There's not going to be unity. There are a lot of antagonisms within society. People don't have the same interests. People are not on the same page, as we're going to get into from some of the reaction to the shitfuck election. Appealing to unity is meaningless. Although, as you say, soothing, given that we're used to remarks from the most powerful people in block capitals. And
I mean, I take your point. I just still think that it's better than just literally going for the jugular every morning.
Sure.
It could potentially take the edge off a bit of it. It doesn't. Obviously, nobody seriously thinks that he's just going to end all of these antagonisms overnight. But it's just better to hear somebody saying stuff like that than what we've been hearing over the last 4 years. That's all I'm saying.
The antagonisms obviously predate Trump as well. I mean, I'm talking in sort of class interest terms, that the interests of people on minimum wage are not the same as the bosses of companies. They have different interests, and you've got to piss some people off some of the time. You can't try to just run entirely bland, inoffensive regime. And his best or his most detailed remarks so far have been on address relating to the bug. And he's clearly made that the priority, as is natural. He's unveiled a new task force with a lot of people with letters behind their names. And so he's talking a lot about a mask is not a political statement, like begging people to look after one another. And that's very welcome and sane. And I commend him for that. However, his efforts to present some normality and a sort of return to life how it was before Trump is being undermined, as a lot of people aren't going quietly, are they?
No. I mean, I did wonder, actually, 4 years ago, did we behave with the sort of magnanimity that we're expecting Trump voters to behave now? I mean, I've spent a lot more of the last 4 years than I like to admit talking about the Kremlin and dark money and Facebook ads and Cambridge Analytica, so it doesn't bode well for the Trump people changing tack. I mean, the left does have its own deep state conspiracy theories, and failing that, it does also kind of just instinctively dismiss conservative voters as living under a false consciousness and so on. So I don't necessarily want to begrudge people for falling into traps and
on your
belief
point,
systems.
I'd say liberals and centrists more than leftists, but they never accept losing elections either. When Trump won in 2016, it was the Russians. When the Brexit won the referendum, it was Russians. When Corbyn took over the Labour Party, it was totally unacceptable. And people within and sort of vaguely attached to the party made it their guiding focus to do everything they could to overturn that result. So, let's not pretend anyone's any good at losing these days.
No.
But what the notionally defeated party here are doing is going to, I guess, new lengths. I mean, so the Trump administration is blaming lawsuits out like nobody's business at states all over the country, saying that poll watchers were blocked and dead people were voting and Republican ballots were getting thrown in bins. None of these have stood up to any scrutiny whatsoever, but that's only led to even more lawsuits following them. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like there is a lot to these efforts to, avoid reality. Although one other point I'd make is that the peculiarity of having a bug election is that you did have this situation where Trump was a long way ahead in a lot of states, and then suddenly you had all these mail-in votes that wouldn't normally be there in such numbers, just dramatically changing the results in all the key states. And you can imagine how that is unusual. That doesn't normally happen. And
there is, but it's a very simple explanation for it.
Well, there is, if you want to believe it. And I do. But if you don't, then you can easily find that. I mean, it would be surprising, I think, given where the discourse has got to, if a lot of people did accept that. And I suppose a lot of the ground had been prepared in the weeks before the election by Trump saying that he was going to bring his lawyers in, whatever, and the total collapse in trust in any of the institutions. So you could say that this was inevitable. Just quickly, there are bad excuses. There's like bad loser excuses, like saying Republican votes were thrown in the bin. And then there's like the more loopy end of things, where this evangelical news outlet called Charisma has revealed the stunning news that a supercomputer known as the Hammer, combined with a software system called Scorecard, has altered 3% of the votes. This is getting a big audience. This is getting some traction. This is backcountry. I mean, there's the regular groundless attempts to undo the result. And then there's like the really bonkers ones as well.
I am struggling why God would allow a Joe Biden and a Kamala Harris to continue to kill babies in this country, why it wouldn't be stopped. You got any help for me here?
Well, it could be that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are a judgment of God on the United States for our sin, for our idolatry, for our child sacrifice.
Initially, this was Trump holed up in a bunker on his own, saying that the election had been stolen. What's changed over the last 48 hours is that the flames of his fantasy are now being fanned by these Republican grandees, because they have to play along. You can see it in their faces. Even like highly decorated lawyers like Ted Cruz, who very obviously know better, are just sitting there dribbling this flannel all over the networks. And they need to keep their donors sweet, first of all. They need to rile up their base for these runoffs in Georgia so they can keep the Senate. But mainly, they need to kind of give the impression of being genuine Trump supporters, like on a personal level. Because if they let on that they know he's a moron, and they've always known he's a moron, they'll theoretically have to spend the rest of their lives fielding questions about why they just stood pat and allowed this man to just poison American politics every day for 4 fucking years. I mean, there's no such thing as the GOP anymore. It is the Trump party. Like, they bet the farm on him. So the grift is going to become more insane and hilarious as time goes on, I think.
They're in too deep. It's the sunk cost fallacy. Although I will say that the Republicans weren't great to begin with. I mean, you were like Sarah Palin in 2016 going on about birtherism. And I mean, you know, they're pretty much the Confederates still, and they always have been. But they're just a bit more crazy about it now. And that Georgia point you mentioned is interesting, because so those two senators that are in these two
Kelly Loeffler, she was the insider trader. Trading one.
Yeah. So they've got these two elections in January to decide who has control of the Senate, which would be the difference between, in theory, Biden being able to pass a massive stimulus.
Actually do anything.
Yeah. Or does Mitch McConnell just sort of sit in there sabotaging everything? And apparently Trump personally rang up both Loeffler and Perdue, asking them to do what they could to try and get the Georgia results reversed.
They basically tried to shit-can the Republican.
The Secretary of State, like the guy who's in charge of the results. But the implication of Trump's call was that if they didn't do that, he'd blow up their Senate chances. He'd make them traitors in the eyes of his supporters, and they'd have no chance. So that's an interesting approach, that he'd be willing to blow the Republicans' hold on the Senate for his personal aggrandizement. And so they dutifully asked for the Georgia Secretary of State to resign for failing the people, even though he maintains, and I'm sure he did, run a very clean election. So, you know, far be it from me to offer words of sympathy for people attached to the Republican enterprise, but he seems to have displayed some integrity there.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell from a long lens photo of three blokes on a golf course, you know, what the sort of moment-to-moment motivations of these people are. And presumably there's a small minority around him who are gently suggesting that he might stop shitting on his own gravestone. But, you know, the tragedy of Trump's life in many ways is that he's probably never had any friends, you know. Like, certainly not the sort who've got the bottle to actually go around his house and stick the kettle on and just be like, look, you know, you've got the wrong end. You sort your life out. Stop being a prick.
I think he's beyond the kettle now.
Yeah. It's like a sort of arrested adolescent thing where, I mean, like, one of the problems with growing up rich, I'd imagine, is that you're under less pressure to develop a tolerable personality. So you've got loads of cool shit in your house, like swimming pools and jet skis and water slides or whatever. And the average 8-year-old is going to be quite happy to tolerate you in order to get a razz on the old whatever it is. I mean, I won't mention any names, but I know I was. And maybe, I mean, if you can allow that sort of thing to fester, you all the way up until someone's mid-70s, you do sort of get somebody like Donald Trump.
Basically. I mean, another feature of this is that the social media companies have been making a big effort to really crack down on unacceptable speech. So, amusingly, all of Trump's tweets are getting labeled as lies, effectively. Steve Bannon's been chucked off Facebook. There's just been a general purging of people who are saying the wrong thing about this election or casting doubt on its integrity, which I don't know, maybe you should be able to do. And just as a tangent, it seems like even Fox News has been chucking off.
They cut Kayleigh McEnany, didn't they?
Yeah, that was a but I mean, moment. My main point is that, like, as we've talked about before, social media arbitration of speech is a worrying situation, a slippery slope. I mean, you already have a situation around the world where repressive regimes are able to lean on Facebook and say, can you get these dissidents off our platform? So it's not an ideal situation at all. One other side point is that a lot of the right has been moved onto this other platform, Nazi Twitter or Parler, been spouting off with some quite strong material. Like, for instance, a police chief from Arkansas, Chief Lang Halland, after the election said, will 700 people come with me to DC and fight our way into Congress and arrest every Democrat who participated in this coup? We may have to shoot and kill many of the communist BLM, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa Democrat foot soldiers to accomplish this. Death to all Marxist Democrats. Take no prisoners, leave no survivors. And he still hasn't deleted his account. He's apparently deleted the comment, but he doesn't think it's a resigning matter.
Just to take this back to bug territory for a moment, we'd probably agree that the sort of right-wing populism espoused by Trump has made dealing with the bug much harder. There's such a focus on strength and machismo, and there's been like a weaponization of conspiracy theories and public health measures and science generally have become politicized. I mean, other than a few outliers like Australia and Belgium, the general pattern is if you've got one of these folks driving the bus, that's bullish for the bug. And I just wonder how much damage that sort of politics has sustained after the election last week, because the bug is in hog heaven at the minute and we're not going to be out of the woods for 6 months at least. And I mean, on the one hand, you could say that a lot of populist leaders all over the world were heavily invested in Trump winning for various reasons. Like our own PM is a case in point.
Yeah, he looks like shit, doesn't he? Because he talks about Obama's Kenyan ancestral dislike of Britain.
Yeah, he really lit the fuse with that. Yeah.
And so I think his crew, and I imagine him and Biden are still pretty tight, and probably Kamala Harris, they're probably all good pals. They probably got a few WhatsApps going, like talking
about
the football.
Absolutely hate him. I mean, this is a disaster for him. But I just thought the fact that Trump has gone has kind of isolated these people to an extent, and it would have had a kind of a demobilizing effect on, you know, the Darren Grimeses and Lawrence Foxes and sort of other bullshit merchants of this world. No bad thing. But equally, the takeaway for these people and also any kind of aspiring populists who are kind of circling the carcass is that you can get in, lie through your teeth all day, every day for 4 years, allow 250,000 people to die prematurely on your watch. That's about 80 9/11s. And then turn around and get the second most votes of any presidential candidate in American history. And a lot of people will be thinking, you know, absent a pandemic, that's how it's done. That's how you get to the top. So he's blazed a trail for fuck knows what is in the post. Do you know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a big Ramona, it must be pleasing for you in a way, because at the time of in 2016, when there was both the American election and the referendum, a lot of Brexity Tories were giving the Obama administration the cheerio treatment.
Yeah.
Thrilled to have a kindred spirit in the White House. Hmm. And now they're very much back to square one, and having fucked off Europe and becoming entirely dependent on America.
Mm. This, you know, US trade deal, that was kind of the trophy, wasn't it, of this whole thing?
They're in a bit of a pickle. Although that said, can we be... I mean, my last point on this is, who are the military going to back? I mean, because if Trump's not leaving and the Democrats haven't really got the sort of wherewithal to call his bluff, we had this in Egypt in 2011. Who are the military going to get behind? Probably Trump, I imagine. When Trump cancels the election and declares himself supreme dictator,
yeah,
is anyone going to get in the way?
Well, several high-ranking military figures in America have already said that they're just simply not going to get involved. And I think there is a constitutional break on that sort of thing.
I think those guardrails are being smashed through, and... Any appeals to the manager are going to fall on deaf ears.
Now, more than ever, we need...
radio. Commence blathering.
There's been a whole hoo-ha about how bad the messaging's been.
We think it's important to stay sane.
Radio.
When the fuck is this going to end?
Just trying to find something properly weird.
We need to find whatever it takes to get through this rotten fucking plague. You ready?
There's been some good news. We may or may not have a vaccine. Biden may or may not be president. But also society is collapsing. And that's sort of manifesting through transport. A while back, the government allocated £2.5 billion to active travel schemes, taking road space away from cars and giving it to active transport. And part of this has been this thing called the Quiet Road Scheme, whereby councils have created low traffic neighbourhoods, mostly in London.
Yeah.
And so what this practically entails is putting up these cutesy flower boxes that block roads so that cars can't get down them. And so this is lovely if you're just staying at home and want to be able to play on the street with your animals and children. But other people, like, for instance, the people that can't work from home and have to maybe, like, drive to a hospital at 5 a.m, aren't feeling it. So we've got a febrile situation whereby the sort of counsellors that introduced this are getting abuse and death threats. And there's sort of tension.
I was talking to a friend of mine earlier who lives in Hackney. And she was telling me it's basically rush hour all day. And when she told me that, I just presumed it was just because no one wanted to go on the train, so they all jumped in their cars instead. But it looks like this might be adding to it. I mean, it's a really nasty combo if you've got a situation where everyone who's got a car is going to be driving it instead of going on the train, and you've got these flower boxes everywhere. It's going to kick off, isn't it?
The flower boxes are a lot more contentious than they would intuitively seem. I mean, some people feel they're like oppressive and authoritarian, and that, you know, what right does the man have to just suddenly block off your road? I mean, what if you want to be like, you know, importing medical supplies or recreational drugs in bulk down there, and then suddenly, you know, you're thwarted. So, yeah, like that's just another symptom of how what I talked about before, that in the first lockdown, there was a lot more of a sense of we're all in this together and unity. And now, particularly as there's as it gets more sort of polarized on class lines, as in like the people who can afford to work at home are still all right, and the people that still need to get around or have been laid off. I mean, it's exposed irreconcilable antagonisms, and society is more fractious. It's like a flammable situation where you think that all the grievances that people have, it could lead to something worse. I mean, I had this when I tried to deposit some trash in what I thought was like a communal bin. And this dude chased me up the street and was like, stay the fuck out of my bins, and threatened to call the cops. So there's a lot of tensions bubbling away, rising to the surface. Bicycles, according to the Evening Standard, are being stolen at 300%. The rates they were before lockdowns. Dogs are being stolen too. So society is collapsing, is it not? We're going to end up with sort of vigilante neighborhood watch gangs as we originally anticipated way back in April.
Yeah, I mean, Nigel Farage, who knows a thing or two about exploiting the politics of resentment, we talked about his new venture last week, Reform UK. And he's basically now, I mean, we talked about how he was just, he's kind of isolated. He hasn't got much to do. And so basically the game now is to just wage an all-out war on the Enlightenment, where Brussels bureaucrats in his model are now going to be replaced by kind of ivory tower scientists with dodgy data.
You don't understand people like you and me.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically it seems like to win in politics, you need to be prepared to tell people what they want to hear. And the problem now is that what people want to hear is fucking mental.
We haven't got long left as some sort of coherent society. We've seen America collapse into this pseudo civil war situation where you've got police chiefs saying that every political opponent needs to be imprisoned or executed. And I don't think we're a million miles off that here. So this good news that we opened with about a vaccine and potentially somebody other than Donald Trump running the world's only superpower cannot come soon enough.
Well, that's all, folks. Congratulations on making it this far. If you'd like to threaten us, you can do so concisely on Twitter. That's @BugRadio2020. Or if you'd like to go into some detail about the various pieces of torture equipment you'd like to use or the music you'd like playing in the background, you can email us on BugRadio2020@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. As always, wash your hands and piss off.